Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown with Steve Tasker, hour number two of the show. And we'll be having an update here soon. As you heard in the update at the top of the hour, the Bills have officially released guard Spencer Long. We'll have an update direct from Brandon Bean about where things stand with free agent guard Brian Winters, who was released by the Jets. There has been reported interest in him by the Bills. And Brandon Bean will provide us with an update as he was on WGR this morning with Howard Simon and Jeremy White. But joining us now is the man who is now part of the relaunch of ESPN's NFL Live. It is their NFL analyst, the one, the only, Dan Orlovsky. Dan, thanks for joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Good to be with you, bud. Enjoying the summer and gearing up for fingers crossed next season.
And like Steve always has us ask our guests, how are you and the family doing? You guys kind of navigating your way through this COVID thing okay?
Yeah, we're doing well. You know, we try to keep it in perspective and every day try to find some fun stuff to do. Thankfully, we live in Connecticut, and in Connecticut for the past, you know, month to 6 weeks is somewhat normal with it. So we've been able to have at least try to have some fun in this. So we're doing well. We're doing well. Thank you.
Yeah. Dan, so go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, Dan, Chris and I have been talking about your assertion that the NFL should be in bubbles, at least either regional bubbles or 32 different bubbles or one big bubble, just sequester their players away from the general public for the duration of the season. When do you think it's going to, and I get it, it's been working for the NBA and the NHL, and Major League Baseball didn't bubble up and they are paying the price. When do you think it's going to get to the point where it's too late to bubble up?
Well, we're probably in that window now, to be honest with you. You know, I would say, you know, obviously the deeper you get into the season, the more challenging it gets. Listen, I'm a very, very aware of the challenges that it would present, right? You can't do one bubble. That's impossible because, you know, each team requires probably 200 people, you know, and so if you're looking at 32 teams times 200 people, there's nowhere that has the space for that. But I think that, like, my thought process is we need to change the way we're thinking as an NFL community. We need to change the way the schedule is set up just for this year. Let's do two bubbles in the Northeast and two bubbles in the Southeast. And there's facilities that can manage this stuff. You can use local facilities to practice, but your hotel is your bubble. And then those teams only play those teams throughout the season. The teams in the Northeast, you only bus and play those teams. We're not getting on airports. We're not getting on planes. You're going to go bus and play those teams. You're going to live in the hotel for the whole season. Two bubbles in the Southeast, a bubble in the South, a bubble in the Midwest, a bubble in the West. And so, yeah, let's not make the Atlanta Falcons go play the Denver Broncos. Like, we don't have to do that this season. And so my thought process is, like, what is the number one goal this year in the NFL? That is obviously for everyone to stay as healthy as possible and two, to pull it off. And so I start backwards. How does that happen? And I'm looking at it going, wait, we think that we're just going to get through this. Like, we're going to be immune to it. Like, people are going to be okay. Like, and yeah, there's challenges to it. And being away from your family would absolutely stink. And there'll be moments that are very difficult. But does it give you the safety? Yes. And does it give you the best chance to earn your paycheck this year? Yes. And so I think we'd see less opt-outs. We'd see guys feeling safer. And I think it's the best opportunity to have this season.
We're talking to Dan Orlovsky from ESPN, who has raised the idea that it's time for the NFL to bubble up, even though time is probably running out on that. Dan, I was just, you know, sometimes you see things on a text or you see things on social media and they come across in a certain way. So you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I looked at your tweet from last week when you tweeted, "Don't tell me you can't, NFL, learn and be proactive, create 10 small bubbles," and then you outlined what you just outlined to us. "Find ways to make that happen. Cost will be under $15 million per team. Your $250 million revenue may count on it." I sensed a sense of, I think disdain is too strong a word, but it sounded like you were saying it like this. "Don't tell me you can't, NFL." Am I right with the tone with which you struck when you were typing that tweet out?
Oh, yeah, you're accurate. That's accurate. And that's also because you hear so many people say, "Well, you can't." Dude, you're the NFL. You're one of the biggest businesses in America. Like, don't tell me you can't figure out that there's not enough smart people to figure out how to logistically pull this off. And that's why I referenced, like, we got to change the way we're thinking in the schedule. Don't tell me you can't pull this off. Don't tell me you can't do bubbles. Don't tell me you can't figure out the cost analysis and going, again, max 200 people per team. That's including doctors and front office people and players and medical staff, all that stuff. Equipment staff, 200 people per team. You're looking at $15 to $20 million of cost for the season. Your $250 million revenue is not going to happen unless you are proactive rather than reactive. The NFL can basically move mountains. If they can do whatever they want. They have the power to do that. One, because they have powerful people. Two, because they have the financial means. And three, because they have a massive following. So that's my point of, like, don't tell me you can't create these bubbles. Don't tell me that we can't figure out a way to point to the NBA and to PGA Tour and to MLS and to hockey and go, what they're doing is working. And yes, our numbers are different than them, but what they're doing is working when it comes to the people that they're working with, and point to MLB and going, you guys aren't. Like, and go, okay, we want to be more like the former. We want to be more like the people who are working. How do we do that? Listen, guys, it's going to cost you $20 million, but your revenue is going to stay stagnant from what is last year. It's also going to help your cap next year. What do we got to do? What do we got to do? Because that's, like, you're the NFL. I just don't buy the whole, well, we can't thing.
Dan, knowing what we know about how the negotiations went between the union and the owners, how do you think that would have played out had they gotten an early start? Had that been their plan from the get-go? How difficult would it have been? And, you know, we've got now like less than three opt-outs per team. How would that have changed in your scenario, you think, if the union said, listen, you're all going to be sequestered, say goodbye to your wife and kids for 4 months or 5 months, and for the playoffs, 6 months, you know, say goodbye to them. We're going to do this bubble thing. Here's how it's going to work. What would the players' union have said, and how would those negotiations have been different than what they have been?
Well, obviously there would have been details tied to it. Like, okay, are you going to allow my family to come into the bubble? And if they come into the bubble, are you going to provide housing for them? Where are my children? Like, what's the school? I know there's details that would have to be figured out, but I look at it from a very black and white, fundamentally foundational aspect. Hey guys, and I'm talking about the people who are making 400 grand, the league minimum rookies, and I'm talking about the guys who are making $3 to $4 million, that there's this very short window for you to make your money, because the NFL does have some multimillionaires. Some, but the majority of the NFL, 70% of the NFL is league minimum salary guys. The average career is 3.5 years. So the guys that are in that window, that 70% league minimum in 3.5 years, the number one way that you can get your money this season, this money that you've worked really hard for like 10 to 12 years, is if we put you in a bubble away from your family and away from your everyday life for 5 months. I would imagine that 99.9% of the players would sign up for that. I did that, now not because COVID, but in the 2011 season, my wife was pregnant with triplets. I was playing for the Colts. She was a high-risk pregnancy, so she lived in Philadelphia, stayed in Philadelphia because she had to be at UPenn, and we were away for the whole season, all of her pregnancy. It stunk. I'm not going to lie. It was hard. But that was our only option. That was my only option to make my money. And so I can't imagine guys sitting back and going, you know what, I can't be away from my wife and kids for 150 days because it's just too much to ask of me, and I don't want that $3 million. Like, the military does it all the time for way less money, and I understand that's different, but, like, what are we saying here, guys, that, like, you can't make that sacrifice for your family? Like, I struggled to believe that would be the case.
That actually was an exact comment from one of our listeners who tweeted that comment in, saying the military does that all the time for a lot less money, and he's 100% right. Dan, what I wanted to ask you was the common refrain that we hear out there about the NFL being different than some of these other leagues, and why people think they can get away with the protocols and policies as currently constituted, is because they think that because the NFL only plays once a week, there's less exposure risk. Do you think there is a false sense of security created in the fact that football only happens once a week and that they won't have as great an exposure risk?
Yeah, but, okay, football only happens once a week. So? COVID has proven that does not matter. Like, only need one interaction. You know, you only need one case. You only need one bypassing of something from somebody, and one becomes two, and two becomes four, and four. Like, we've learned that. So the whole you only play once a week, that has absolutely no – because here's the thing. You play on Sunday, but then you go to work on Monday with your group, with your team. You're still – so if you have that interaction with someone on Sunday, whether it's via travel or your game or somebody else on your other team, like, you're then going back into work on Monday. So it's not like you're not working all week and just playing a game on Sunday. And so that's why there's this thought process that just because there's one game, it's going to minimize, you know, the opportunity or the potential. You only need one. There's nothing like it's all about close interaction and large gatherings. You only need one. And so that's why there's this false sense of security tied to that, so to speak. And so, I don't buy that.
We're talking with Dan Orlovsky, and Dan, when you come into the season like this, there's such a ripple effect. It's even affecting how players feel about their last year of college. I mean, college football right now is an absolute mess. How is that going to translate? And what are the ripple effects going down the road for the draft, for free agency, for young players who, and like rookie free agents this year, if they're a high risk, they could opt out, never play it down in the National Football League and make $350,000 this year. The ripple effects of this are far reaching. What do you think the most significant one might be?
Yeah, the most significant one will be, I mean, there's going to be some players whose careers are cut a year or two short. There's going to be some players whose careers are extended a year or two short. We're going to see. I mean, this goes all – think about it like this, guys. Let's start with high school football, that the high school athletes that, you know, maybe didn't get to play or show off in their spring showcase for football or may not get this season. They're going to get overlooked when it comes to recruiting. So then we're going to have some really big-time star players go to some smaller schools because they never had that year of opportunity to really kind of catapult themselves into the recruiting trail. So then what is the ripple effect from that 3 years down the road? Are we going to get some incredible small school prospects because of that? And then going into the draft, you know, we're getting more college kids opt out. You know, and so I'm fascinated to see how the NFL handled those kids, because the last time we saw guys go from the NFL or college football, skip a year for whatever reason, miss a year of college football and go to the draft, were Mike Williams and Maurice Claret, and both of those were failures. And now maybe there's variables tied to that failure, but they were failures. And I'm going to be fascinated to see if the NFL kind of shows any correlation or just crosses over their references when it comes to that. How did they miss, or what did they miss when it comes to that? And is there any similarity? And then, you know, obviously when you go into the NFL as a rookie, your first year is a wash more often than not. It's just a wash because so much change. Is this going to, you know, change the way an organization looks at a quarterback from 3 years from now? Because they're going to go, wait, his rookie year was COVID. And then his second year was actually the first time he had an off season. So are they going to be a little bit more patient with their younger players? Like, that, I think, will be the most likely scenario, is the patience organizations will show with quarterbacks and coaches and young players in general because of this season.
Talking with ESPN's Dan Orlovsky, who's going to be part of the new relaunch of ESPN's NFL Live. Dan, we'd be remiss if we didn't at least get a Josh Allen question in for you. So we did get an opportunity to talk to him via Zoom call yesterday as he met with members of the media. And just with respect to what is now year three for him, it was interesting to hear him kind of run down the list of where he wants to be better. And I know you've kind of analyzed his game time and time again, but I want you to kind of react to what he said. He said, I learned from that playoff game and from a lot of my film from last year that there are times where I just need to take the check down or hit the back. I do want to improve on my deep ball accuracy, but I also want to keep us at a third and long. How hard is it, do you think, in your opinion, for guys as physically gifted as Josh Allen is to kind of just take the check down and take what a defense gives him in those kind of situations, especially maybe when you're down on the scoreboard in a close game? How hard is it for players that gifted to fight that natural tendency to just make the hero play?
Yeah, I'm super glad you asked that question. And once you started asking it, in my mind, it immediately said to my mind thought, consistency within structure, right? And so, you know, Josh is one of those players, and I started realizing this about Matthew Stafford many years ago, because watching Matthew play, he had such physical talent. I'm not saying they're the same player. He had such physical talent that he didn't do things within consistent structure well, because he never had to. He just never had to. I am so much better than everybody on the field. I can do whatever the heck I want with the football. And that's kind of been the type of athlete and talent Josh has been, is just better than everybody. And so he's gotten away with a certain style of play for a long time. I don't want to gotten away. He's had success with a certain style of play for a long time. Now, when you fast forward it to the mindset and how you do it in the NFL, it's such a fine line of, I want to continue to be a instinctual and reactionary aggressive player, because that's who he is. He's a reactionary player, he's an instincts player, and he's an aggressive player. You want to continue to be that 98% of the time. And then 2% of the time, you got to play quarterback. And that's not meant as a dig at all, but playing quarterback is about oftentimes management and execution and boring and simplicity. I've said for a long time, look at the last 15 years of quarterbacks in the NFL, Breeze, Brady, Manning. These guys are boring. They're boring football players. They're great when greatness presents itself, but they're boring. Get the ball out. Take the check down. It's not sexy. Coach, I can make this throw. I can make this throw. And I'll never forget, Matthew, we were having a conversation one time watching tape, and, you know, I'm in a coach mode. I'm going, dude, Matthew, just, it's first down. This guy's wide open. It's 3 yards. at worst, it's going to be a 3 or 4 yard completion. And he looked at me, he goes, yeah, but I don't think that he looked at me and said, but I want to go make that wow throw. And I want to make sure that everyone knows I can make that wow throw. And that's part of a maturation for a young player. It's hard. You know, there's so many young quarterbacks in the NFL that right now are having success because of the recess style of play, because of the freelance style of play. I think Josh is one of them. Eventually, that scale is going to even out. And all the young, talented quarterbacks right now are going to have to find a way to still play really good football when it comes to consistency within the structure of play. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's not their ball out. Instead of trying to make a play all the time. And so, but you want them to keep that stinger. And so it's just part of Josh's maturation process. Guys got to be themselves. You got to be who you are, but always refining your game. And that's kind of where he is.
Last question I've got for you, Dan. It's a long one. I don't want to go down this rabbit hole too far, but we're going into year three for that 2018 rookie quarterback class. Lamar Jackson was the MVP last year. Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold. I'll leave Josh Rosen off the table, and let's just go with Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Give me a top and bottom for those guys about where do you think they're at this point, year three. You can kind of get a really good handle or a better handle where they are, although none of them are a finished product.
Yeah, I'd say you actually have to throw out Sam Darnold of the conversation because, I mean, he's just complete and utter failure around him, both on the field and off the field. So it's like it's impossible to gauge what Sam Darnold is now and what he's going to be, other than you probably see him very similar to what you saw him coming out of college because he hasn't been given a fair chance. Lamar Jackson is the one that's been put in the healthiest environment. The Baltimore Ravens have a decade plus worth of good drafting and good people around him and really good coaching and Super Bowl and all that stuff. And so Lamar is the guy that has proved a lot of people to be incorrect. He's made people think outside the box. He's going to be an absolute superstar for the next foreseeable future. Yes, he takes too many hits. One of the things that we have seen to prove indisputable when it comes to that position is the hits add up for players and the hits add up for quarterbacks. And so that's my only like concern. I don't want to say concern, but like my hope is that he breaks that trend a little bit, but he's not going to fall off when it comes to his performance. Baker Mayfield's a guy that, you can put him in – listen, they've been bad around him when it comes to organizationally and head coaching-wise. Like, last year was a disaster, but there's a lot of talent around him. He needs to value the football more. Do I think Baker Mayfield can be a top handful quarterback in the NFL? Yes. Why? Because the number one physical attribute a quarterback needs to have is ball placement. It's accuracy. And he has that in big-time spades. So – you know, with better coaching, I think Baker Mayfield's going to have a very, very good season and bright future. And then for Josh, the thing that I'm most excited about, Josh, is outside of, like, everyone raves about his leadership and his intangibles and work ethic, because that gives you such a good starting point. He continues to get better. He continues to grow and develop and get better. And so, you know, if Josh had the 2019 season in 2018 and then the 2018 season in 2019, I'd be a little bit more like, what? But he's getting better and better and better. And it seems like Dable's got a good pulse on what he is as a player. And so could Josh Allen become, you know, our generation's Big Ben? I don't know if he's going to be that good, but I could see, because of the organization, I could see Josh Allen becoming a top 3 to 4 AFC quarterback for the next 10 years if he continues to develop, yes.
Okay, I think you just made the day of every Bills fan with that last comment. Right at the end, you saved the best for last, Dan. So listen, Link, we enjoy watching you on ESPN. We're excited to see you on the relaunch of ESPN's NFL Live. Even love your video breakdowns on your Twitter handle. So thanks very much for the time. We appreciate it as always. And good luck to you and your family steering clear of this crazy stuff we got going on.
I appreciate it. You guys too. Thanks always.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.